Reading The Unknown Reality by Jane Roberts, A Seth Book, Volume 2. Session 723. Seth states, "Your worldview is your personalized interpretation of the physical universe. Your home station does not simply present programming for you to view. Instead, you help create the program, of course, even while you are a part of it. On any given afternoon, certain elements of experience will be quote-unquote given, roughly sketched in. There are certain cues to set the stage. It may be a snowy, humid, or dry and sunny day, for instance. The location may be a city or a town. Yet within that loose framework, you create the program of the day according to your own worldview. Now, if that view is expansive, then you have far greater leeway in creating your experience. You can add greater depth, so to speak, to the characterization. You can, in other words, take advantage of the unknown reality by letting it add to your home station. In the dream state, you range beyond your waking worldview. You are able to bring into focus other interests and activities. These can remain in the background during your waking life, or you can decide to enlarge your worldview by taking advantage of your dreaming activities. Many of the exercises given here are geared in that direction. You are not alone in physical reality, so obviously your picture of the world is also affected by the worldviews of others, and you play a part in their experiences. There is a constant waking give and take. The same give and take occurs in the dream state, however. You affect your world through your dreams, then, as much as you do through your waking activities. In terms of time, lapses had to occur as various species physically matured and developed. They did so in response to inner impetus. The many languages that are now known originated in what you can call, from your point of view, non-waking reality. Words, again, are related to the neurological structure, and languages follow that pattern. In the dream state, many kinds of communication occur, and there are inner translations. Two people with different languages can speak together quite clearly in certain dreams and understand each other perfectly. They may each translate the communication into their familiar language. Underneath this, however, there are basic inner sounds upon which all language is based, in which certain images give forth their own sound. And the two together portray clear, precise meaning. A long time ago, I said that language would be impossible were it not for its basis in telepathic communication. And that communication is built up of microscopic images and sounds. These are translated into different languages. Consciously, then, your worldview is affected by the language of your culture or country. Certain sounds, inflections, and expressions taken together have a more or less precise meaning. The meaning is usually quite specific and often directional. Words in a language function not only by defining what a specific object is, for example, but also by defining what it is not. To some extent, in the dream state, you are freed of such cultural leanings. In the most effective of dreams, experience is actually more direct, in that it is less limited by language concepts. Waking, you generally become more familiar with your thoughts through words that are mental. automatically translating your thoughts into language. Your thoughts therefore fall or flow into prefabricated forms. In the dream state, however, thoughts are often experienced directly. Quote, you live, end quote, you live them out. You become what they are. They are projected instantly and in such a fashion. They escape the limitations that you often place upon them. That is why it is frequently difficult to remember your dreams in a verbal fashion or squeeze them back into the expression of usual language. Your language often purposely inhibits meaning. To some extent, language does make the unknown known and recognizable. It sets up signposts that each person in a culture recognizes. To do this, however, it latches upon certain significances and ignores others. You might know the word for quote unquote rock, for instance, or a rock. Knowing the word might actually prevent you from seeing any specific rock clearly as it is, or recognizing how it is different from all other rocks. The play of sunlight or shadow upon any given rock may utterly escape you. You will simply pass it by under the category of quote unquote rock. In the dream state, you might find yourself sleeping on a sun-warmed rock or climbing on icy stones. You might feel yourself encased in a rock with your consciousness dispersed. You might have any number of different experiences involving rocks, all quite liberating. After such an experience, you might look at rocks in an entirely different fashion and see them in ways that escape your language. Rocks give forth sounds that you do not hear, for example. Yet your language automatically limits your perception of what any rock is. To some extent, words come between you and your direct expression. They should and can express that experience instead. All right, practice element 17. Part of the unknown reality, then, is hidden beneath language and the enforced pattern of accustomed words. So, for an exercise, look about your environment. Make up new, different, quote unquote, words for the objects that you see about you. Pick up any object, for example. Hold it for a few seconds. Feel its texture. Look at its color. And spontaneously give it a new name by uttering the sounds that come into your mind. See how the sounds bring out certain aspects of the object that you may not have noticed before. The new word will fit as much as the old one did. It may, in fact, fit better. Do this with many objects, following the same procedure. You can instead say the name of any object backwards. In such ways, you break up to some extent the automatic patterning of familiar phrases so that you can perceive the individuality that is within each object. To get in direct contact with your own feelings as they are, again, make up your own spontaneous sounds sometimes. Your emotions often cannot be expressed clearly in terms of language, and such unpatterning can allow them to flow freely. The freshness of dream experience lies in its direct nature. Your cultural world does not have any clear understanding of the nature of dreams, so that their direct, clear expression is not recalled often in the morning. At night, you tune into dream reality simply by closing out so-called waking reality. But The same kind of dream experience continues beneath your focus in waking life. Dreaming, you are still aware of your daily experience, but it is seemingly peripheral. Waking, your dream experience is peripheral also, but you are less aware of that condition. Both together represent the dimensions of your consciousness, and they exist simultaneously. You can and often do work out in dreams the challenges of daily life. In waking life, you are also working out challenges set for yourselves in the dream state. Obviously, then, your consciousness is equipped to function in the known and unknown realities, and the divisions that you have set up are quite arbitrary. You may understand that many of your dreams have a symbolic meaning. It may escape you, however, that the objects with which you surround yourself in physical life also have symbolic meanings. Only these are three-dimensional. You may spend time trying to understand the nature of dreams and their implications without ever realizing that your physical life is, to some extent, a three-dimensional dream. It will faithfully mirror your dream images at any given time. Your physical life and your dreaming life are so intimately connected that it can be misleading to say what I am about to say. That waking experience springs from the unknown dream reality. On the one hand, the statement is indeed true. On the other hand, the intricate inner workings make it impossible to separate one from the other. Quote unquote, reality operates basically, however, in a way that is perceived more clearly in the dream state. Freedom from time and place, the wider kind of communication, the great mobility of consciousness. All of these experiences under dreaming conditions are characteristic of the basic nature of reality. Whereas your waking experience provides limitations that are indicators of certain conditions only. To some extent, the greater expression of consciousness can be experienced under usual waking conditions, but only when a personality is flexible enough and secure enough to alter the focus of consciousness. This way, other unperceived data become available. The unknown reality is not beyond your experience, therefore. Any of your scientific or religious disciplines could benefit from a study of the dreaming consciousness, for there, the basic nature of reality exists as clearly as you can perceive it. The inner condition of dreaming is valid. You find yourselves in other times and places because basically, neither time nor space exist as you suppose. There are no basic dangers involved in alterations of consciousness without drugs. But artificial dangers can occur because of your cultural beliefs. These result because such individuals find themselves with no acceptable framework in which to correlate or understand their experiences. They try to fall back upon religious or scientific or pseudoscientific explanations. In a way, the one-line kind of consciousness that you have developed can be correlated with your use of any one language. Experience is programmed, highly specialized, and attains a seemingly tight organization, only because it limits so much of reality. In those terms, if you are bilingual, you are somewhat better off, for your thoughts have a choice of two paths. Biologically, you are physically capable of speaking any language now in use on the face of the earth. You would consider it an achievement if you learned to speak many languages. You would not find it frightening or unnatural, though you would take it for granted that some training was involved. In the same way, your one-line kind of consciousness is but one of many, quote-unquote, languages. The others are as native, as natural, as biologically feasible. Rupert has been involved with what he calls the Sumari language. This is an expression of the consciousness at a different focus. It is the native expression of a kind of experience that happens just outside of your official one-line focus of consciousness. First of all, it breaks up verbal patterning. It is composed, however, of sounds and syllables Rupert has heard before, made up of jumbled romance languages. These are quote-unquote foreign as far as he is concerned. At the same time, those sounds are, in your terms, filled with the implications of antiquity and bring up connotations of the species and of the psyche's past. They alter the usual physical response to meaningful sound. You may not realize it, but your language actually structures your visual perception of objects. Sumari breaks down the usual patterning, therefore, but it also releases the nervous system from its structured response to any particular stimulus. The sounds, however, while spontaneous, are not unstructured. They will present a sound equivalent of the emotion or object perceived, an equivalent that is very direct and immediate, and that bears legitimate correspondence with the object or emotion. The fresh expression sets up a new kind of relationship between the so-called perceiver and the perceived. The Sumari then becomes a bridge between two different kinds of consciousness. And returning to his usual state, Rupert can translate from the Sumari to English. The English itself, however, then becomes charged, freshened with new concepts, carrying within a strangeness that itself alters the relationship of the words. This is a dream or trance language. It is as native to its level of consciousness as English is to your own, or Indian, or Chinese, or whatever. The various focuses of consciousness will have their own quote-unquote languages. Rupert has discovered that beneath the Sumari, there are deeper meanings. He has become aware of what he calls long and short sounds. Some come so quickly that he cannot keep track or speak them quickly enough. Others are so slow that he feels a sentence would take a week to utter. These are the signatures of different focuses of consciousness as they are transposed in your space-time system. Languages express certain kinds of reality, usually by organizing experience verbally and mentally. In your case, again, a certain neurological prejudice occurs. If you experience greater instances of out-of-body consciousness, for example, then your verbal expressions of space and time would automatically change. If you became aware of more of your dreaming experience, your language would automatically expand. Again, automatically, you would also become aware of other neurological patterns than those you use. These, activated, would then be picked up by your scientific instruments and therefore change your ideas in such fields. Many people find themselves singing quote unquote gibberish when they are alone and trying to free themselves from language structuring. Children often play by constructing their own languages, and speaking with tongues is a beautiful example of the attempt to express a reality that escapes the tyranny of overly structured words. Music is a language. Painting is a language. The senses have a language of their own, one that seeps into structured words but dimly. Other focuses of consciousness besides your own have different concepts of time and are actually more biologically correct, in that they have greater knowledge of both cellular and spiritual realities. There is nothing quote unquote wrong with your present habitual kind of consciousness, any more than there is anything wrong with speaking only one language. There is within you, however, the impetus to explore, to expand, to create, and that will automatically lead you to explore inner lands of consciousness, as in your terms, it has led you to explore the other countries of the physical world. All right, so session notes. We have some interesting ones here with some Seth quotes. So, session note number one, for those who might be coming in on this that haven't read the beginning of or listened to the beginning of the volume two, or even heard volume one, really, because that's what this is from. Seth began his quote unquote home station and quote worldview end quote discussions in sections 7:11 and 7:18, respectively. So, if you want more information to the beginning of that, you'd go there. And session note number two states, in chapter five of The Nature of Personal Reality, sessions 623 to 25, all contain Seth's material on inner sound, light, and electromagnetic structures of the body that ordinarily we do not perceive. From the 624th session, for example, Seth stated, "I told you that thoughts are translated into this inner sound. But thoughts always attempt to materialize themselves also. As such, they are incipient images, collectors of energy." End quote. And session note number three states, Seth could be referring to his remark in the 34th session, March 11, 1964, where he states, quote, "Telepathic communication go on continually beneath consciousness, and without the aid of telepathy and of the inner senses, language itself would be meaningless. The hidden cues are the symbols that make language intelligible," end quote by Seth. And session up number four, Rob says that the reference reminded him of Seth's 681st session in Volume 1, where Seth stated, quote, "The deeper explanations, however, in this case of probabilities, demands a further expansion of ideas of consciousness. It is not so much a matter of Rupert's vocabulary, incidentally, since even a specialized scientific one would only present these ideas in its own distorted fashion. It is more a problem of basic language itself, as you are acquainted with it. Words do not exist, for example, for some of the ideas I hope to convey." End quote. This I'm not going to read. You guys can read this if you're interested in Rob's researching of language. The only thing that's missing here, I mean, really needed, is the etymology, the basis of words, I mean, the breakdown. You can read it though and see what he has to say. So I'm going to read right here. So Rob states, Seth tells us, of course, that pre-human communication and human language and speech have originated in rhythmic patterns again and again, since in the far past, our planet has seen the development of a number of presently unknown civilizations. He says to see, for example, his material on reincarnational civilizations and the Lumanians in Chapter 15 of Seth Speaks. In Volume 1 of Unknown Reality, see his discussion on ancient man in the 702nd session, as well as Jane's own material on the, quote, innumerable species of man in the making, end quote, which you'll find in Appendix 6 when it's ready. Rob goes on and states certain presentations in Appendix 18 contain information from Seth about the distortive effects caused by words as he communicates through Jane. Review his excerpt from the 27th session for February 1964, where Seth stated in part, quote, it is difficult for me to have to string out this material in words, period of ellipses, end quote. And then session note number 5 states, as, this is Rob, you know, as an artist, I'm so used to observing our physical world in terms of forms, colors, shadows, shapes, and, quote, negative shapes, end quote. The patterns formed by areas between and around shadows or objects, that I sometimes have to remind myself of the obvious, that each individual in the world perceives it from his or her own viewpoint. How strange, I've found myself thinking that Joe, say, doesn't see our environment in artistic terms, since what I see is so plain to me. But then I tell myself, Joe has a method of cognition that's quite natural to him. If he loves flowers, for instance, he may enjoy more of a sheer emotional reaction through the appreciation of a rose than I can. Session note number 6, I'm just going to paraphrase that Rob, for a long time, since he was young teenager, he liked to read words backwards, you know, license plates, and made it, it was a fun thing that he would do. I don't know how many people haven't done that. I certainly have. I love writing backwards as well, and he's basically talking about how we like to do that. And session note number 7, I'm skipping. Okay, so skipping session note number 7 and 8, you guys can read that if you like. Going to 9. Rob is stating, Jane first came through with Sumari in her ESP class for November 23rd, 1971. Seth then devoted portions of the next 5 sessions to that development. From the 600th for December 13th, each symbol in an alphabet stands for unutterable symbols beneath it. Sound itself, even without recognizable words, carries meaning. Oddly enough, sometimes the given meaning of the word does battle with the psychic and physical meaning of the sounds that compose it. The Sumari word Shambhalina connotes the changing faces that the inner self adopts through its various experiences. Now, this is a word that hints of relationships for which you have no word, end quote by Seth. And then from the 602nd session, January 5, 1972, in your language there are words that sound like the reality they try to represent. These are called onomatopoeia in English. Hush is an example, end quote. And Rob is recommending a rereading of Chapter 8 for Jane's Adventures in Consciousness in connection with the material in this particular note. And Not reading 10 and going to 11. Here's something that might make you want to buy James' Adventures in Consciousness book, if you haven't already read it. It states, in chapter 8 of Adventures, Jane used her Sumari poem, Song of the Pear Tree, to present some examples of such layered or deeper meanings. In one instance, she first translated the Sumari line, quote, I'll try not to bastardize this, Lelotrum, end quote. I don't know if I said that right, but into, that translates into, quote, the pear tree stands, end quote. But later she came to understand that a more literal and evocative meaning is, quote, Earth grows itself into a tree and becomes standing earth with pear faces. End quote. There's actually a lot more that goes with that, obviously, and it's very, very interesting. And last one, number 12, see Appendix 19 for the long and slow sounds, which I have given little tiny example pages that I've read for you guys of that. And when that's ready completely, that will be available and you can go to that. End of dictation, end of session. Next session overview would be my own notes, counterparts, connection with us, greater personhood from which psychic children spring and physical beings come, born into races of men slash women. And Rob's description is counterparts, races of men, and historic periods. Check back.